Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Working Media. This is the podcast where professional journalists offer their insight and advice on having careers in the news media industry. I'm your host, Adrian Ma. This podcast is presented in partnership with JSource, the English language portal for the Canadian Journalism Project. On this episode, we speak with Eternity Martis. She is a senior editor at Daily Extra in Toronto, a major Canadian LGBT-focused online news site. And her writing has also appeared in numerous places, including The Huffington Post, Vice, The Walrus, Salon. Honestly, just too many publications to list. She is prolific, to say the least. And what she is best known for is writing about race relations, women's issues, social justice, often drawing from her own personal experiences, both inspiring and painful. I really enjoyed our chat. She puts herself out there in a way that other writers don't. And she talked to me about the thrills and consequences of speaking her mind. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Eternity Martis. Eternity Martis, hello.
Hello.
Thanks so much for joining us on the show and making time for us, because I know right now time for you is at a premium. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you've had a pretty crazy past few months with some major changes. So what's new with you?
Yes, so you're not wrong. A few things have happened in the last couple of months. So my role as associate editor at Extra has now changed to senior editor. And I'm doing a lot of supervising, which is exciting and challenging and frightening, but it's awesome. And I have acquired a two-book deal with McClellan and Stewart, which is an imprint of Penguin Random House. So I'll be writing books, which is all I've kind of wanted to do really my whole life. So I've got that happening. And on a non-work related exciting news thing, I guess, I was on jury duty for 7 weeks and I learned the system is even worse than I thought it was. So
I just gotta say too, I love your name, Eternity.
Thank you.
It's a fantastic name. Also because do you ever wonder if someone in this great big world of ours is walking around with the name for a limited time only?
Well, possibly. Like, anything can happen. I was named after the perfume, actually.
Calvin Klein.
Yeah.
CK, yeah.
So my mom used to wear it all the time, and she no longer wears it. But when I tell people that, they're so disappointed, because they think, they're like, oh, like, I thought it was deeper. Or, like, your mom was a hippie. I'm like, no, it was just the perfume. That's it. Now I'm stuck with it.
Well, but, you know, that is one hell of a name to be stuck with, because I think you've really built a unique and powerful and interesting brand. And, you know, I think your name is definitely part of it. Your path in journalism has been really fascinating in that you've carved out a space for yourself and you found a voice and kind of at a fairly young age relative, I think, to a lot of other professionals. When did you realize that putting yourself out there, writing about race relations, women's issues, marginalized communities, when did you realize that that was the right direction for you?
So it all kind of happened at once. I grew up fairly sheltered. My mom's side of the family is from Pakistan, so I grew up with, you know, brown family and very strict on, you know, grades and, you know, doing well and getting a job. And I figured, well, you know, I love to write. I've been writing since I was 9. I love everything about books, the smell of books, just the words. And it wasn't really a path that anyone had taken in our family. And so they said, well, why don't you do, you know, be a nurse? And I'm like, well, I can't do math to get even into nursing school. But I'll do social work, and it was a second kind of option for me. And so I went to Western to do my undergrad there, and I was wholly unfulfilled. I did the first year of it, and I was kind of just skating by, and I'm somebody who really does not like to settle, and I felt like I was settling because the school had a women's studies program that I was super interested in, and I took a first-year course. And one day I was talking to my uncle, and I was like, you know, yeah, I guess I'll be a social worker. And he's like, you should be in front of a camera. Like, why are you in social work? And I don't want to be in front of a camera, but I wanted to write. And I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna drop this. So I dropped social work, got into women's studies, decided that I would use that degree to inform my writing. So learn theory. I practiced black feminist, research black feminist thought on my own. Started writing, and in the meantime at Western, because Western in London, Ontario is notoriously racist, I had encountered a lot of men that I hadn't back in Scarborough where I grew up. And so I started writing about race and the way that I was interpreted and perceived among white men and just white people in general. And I'm like, there's something here between, you know, the women's studies and between the race issues and the gender issues. And I really want to talk about that, because when I talk to my Black girlfriends on campus, we're all experiencing the same thing, but nobody is writing about it. And so I went through undergrad writing. I wrote my first piece at 19 called Why I Don't Sleep With White Guys, which was my experience of the practice and the theory. I used bell hooks, one of bell hooks' piece. I wrote it for a friend's blog, and it got picked up by the Huffington Post, went to bed, woke up, and it had gone viral. So that was kind of my entry into this, and I said, well, maybe there's something here. If people can see themselves in this, and I put myself out here, you know, like maybe there's something to this. And that was my first start. And it was not a good start. I was very young, and I didn't realize that talking about sex when your parents didn't even really know you were having sex, talking about all these guys that you've kind of hooked up with or have known, I didn't anticipate that it would go viral. And then I had to have those conversations with my family, but they had already seen it at that point. And that was the hardest part about putting myself out there. Not the trolls who, you know, they never commented on my work. They commented on me, they called me a slut, and, you know, they slut shamed, which is fine, but it was mostly my family I was very worried about, and that was a turning point for me. My grandfather, who I'm terrified of and I love very much, he had wanted to read the piece, and I kept saying, oh, like, you know, like, I'll get it to you, and eventually he found it on his own, and we were in a movie theater, and the movie was about to start, and he, like, leaned over and whispered, like, I read your article. And I was like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? And he was like, I loved it.
Wow.
Yeah. And we had never talked about, like, ever spoken about sex before. Mm. My grandfather and my mom gave me books to read. Sex was never a thing. And that was wonderful, because as people started to read it, he actually shared it with people at work. He asked them what they thought about it. My elementary school teachers, my friends, my employers had all read that piece, and the response was wonderful. And I'm like, somehow I've humanized sex in a way that it's now part of my identity, but people liked it for the writing and not because I had said, well, like, you know, I had sex with white guys and this is why I won't do it anymore, but, like, you know, wow, you really hit on something that was important.
Yeah, and so, you know, this podcast is aimed for aspiring writers, aspiring journalists, and I think many of whom do want to share their personal experiences, do want to explore deeper social issues through their own personal narratives, but, you know, may not realize the consequences of really putting yourself out there like you did. And so you had this interesting experience where, you got some negative comments, you got a lot of positive reinforcement. When did you actually kind of decide that, hey, this is something that I think I can bring to society with my take and something that I want to do. I want to be that vulnerable.
Yeah, so I think it was actually that piece. The response I got was huge. I think there were like 12,000 likes. Strangers were in my, you know, in my inbox, on Facebook, on Twitter, just telling me how much it meant to them. And I figured, well, you know, if me using my experience that people can relate to, using that to contextualize a larger issue over, you know, racism and the exotification of Black women by white men, I've done something right here. And, you know, I'm willing to do that. And so it really, I have an issue with this kind of stuff. It's my own issue, because I write about things and I feel very strongly, like, I have a story. It's my story and I want to share it with people and use that to contextualize a greater social issue. But I don't actually realize how much of myself I'm putting out there until later on, until it's published, until people say, you know, that was very brave of you. And I've never actually thought of what I have been doing as brave. What I do feels very necessary to me. You know, if I don't write about it, I can't sleep, or, you know, I can't think until it's out. And so it's been, you know, that was the moment. And as I've gotten a bit older and, you know, used to the industry, I've had editors say, well, like, we want to hear from you. So, like, share your experience. So along the way, I've been a bit reluctant, but to know that, you know, I'm a woman of color and their editors paying me for my opinion, like, you know, say more. Because in J school, they don't really tell you to say more. They want you to write an objective story. And then I realized, like, I think something's here. I think the experience that I have is somewhat universal for people, and I'm good at it, and it brings people together, and people tell me, you know, I relate to this, I feel less alone. And I'm like, if I can do it well, then I'm going to do it. And I've, you know, the books that I'm writing are about myself. All my writing's about myself in some aspect or the other. And I feel like it helps people connect, especially in this political climate. You feel less alone.
Have there been moments where the negativity, though, was overwhelming, where it got to you?
Yeah, I think it has. One thing that I've tried really hard to do is I understand that personal essay writing, and not so much now, but at the time when I was writing, is not really seen as journalism. And so I tried really, really hard to use my experience as a starting off point, and, you know, using facts and using data. And I found that people were very critical still, and a lot of it was mainly from people who did not, who were not of color, and would say, like, well, I haven't experienced this, so this can't be true. So trying to break down my credibility was a huge thing, on the basis that, like, they hadn't experienced it, which is not really how it works. That really got to me, as well as the comments. I think people are really awful. They don't necessarily comment on the content of work, but they comment on you, and, you know, they comment on what you look like, and, you know, my face was on white supremacist forums, and they had dredged up, like, information about where I went to school. And that kind of stuff really got to me, because you realize that you're a woman, you're a person of color with an opinion, and people are out to get you. But once I learned that, I think I was okay. Now I see the comments, and I know that it's really not about my work, but I have my mom to thank for that, because my mom does not go on the internet. She doesn't know how to turn on a computer. And she bought herself a tablet around the time that I had written Why I Don't Sleep with White Guys, and somehow she found the comments section and put on her little, like, Sarah Palin glasses and started reading these nasty comments to me. And I was like, you know, stop, because I can't handle it. Was in bed for 2 weeks with gastritis, so I had all this terrible pain in my stomach, couldn't get out of bed. I cried for 2 weeks, and then once that was done, it was done. My shell has hardened tremendously since then. It kind of just rolls off right now.
And so let's talk about your book, which, congratulations again.
Thank you.
What an achievement. And really meaningful, because you said you've been wanting to be a published author since you were a little kid.
Yes.
So your first book, they said this would be fun. Mm-hmm. It's going to be published by McClellan and Stewart. Who is the they in the title?
So the they, in a nutshell, the book is really about me and my experience being a woman of color, being a student of color in an all-white Canadian campus. And being sheltered and being from, you know, Scarborough, where it's very multicultural, and the first person in my family to go to university, the only image I had of university was what I had seen in movies. So white kids having, you know, epic keggers, doing, like, whatever they're called, those, like, they lift up your feet over the keg stand.
Keg stand.
Keg stands, yeah. You know, that kind of stuff, frat parties. I wanted all of it because I had never partied. I didn't have friends in school. I was a loser. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll do that. And when I told people I was going to Western, everybody, they said, well, like, you're going to have so much fun. It's a party school. It's going to be great. You're going to, you know, come out of your shell. But then also there seemed to be this, like, underlying whisper network of, but it's also very racist. And it never went further than that. Just that black people didn't go to London, but you're going to have fun because it's university. And then when I got there, I went to, you know, do the keggers and do the nightlife and have the student life. And none of that ended up turning out as I had hoped, because that kind of experience is not made for someone like me. So the racism that you face, student life, when nobody wants to sit beside you because you're the only black kid in class, and some people in your class have never even seen a black person. Encountering blackface at Halloween parties. So all these things that I did not interpret. And those people who said, yes, this would be fun, and this is the best time of your life, this is your university experience, you're going to remember this, also not realizing that, well, that's made for a certain type of person, and that's not me.
Is this going to be a collection of newer essays you're working on, or a compilation of some of your previous work?
It's a little bit, it's a tiny bit of previous work, and then mostly newer work. It's gone through many drafts. I've actually been working on this book since the moment I stepped foot in London, so it's been since 2010. It started as, like, a diary, then a private blog, then a play, and it started all personal, but right now it's more a little bit of personal, and then, like, a greater commentary on what's going on in Canada on campuses with students right now. So it's, I'm reworking it. Drafts are hard. I'd say I'm on the fifth or sixth draft, but it's not a real draft because I keep going back and revising. It's been one of the hardest things I've ever had to write, for sure.
Well, and it's fascinating because, you know, you start this in 2010, and in a lot of ways it seems like it's very prescient because the environment that we're in 2018 seems to require a book like this in a lot of ways. Did you ever kind of see things, you know, taking shape the way they did? I mean, 2018 now, 2010, you know, when you first started writing, I suppose, has your writing changed and evolved given how it seems like society has changed and evolved?
Yeah. Well, when I started writing it at school, at university, it felt like there was this underlying bubble that something was about to burst. You know, there was a Trayvon Martin shooting, Black Lives Matter, two months after I had graduated, Black Lives Matter kind of launched into a global scene. So all this stuff was bubbling under the surface. What I didn't expect was to come out of school, because Western really broke me down. I was very depressed. I was happy to move back home. What I didn't expect was for what came after with the whole political climate. I thought it would get better and not worse. I used to write not with a sense of urgency because I had to get the story out, but my sense of urgency has changed very much. I feel like the urgency is very political now. The way I write is very deliberate. I'm looking for a certain audience. Yes, I'm speaking to people like me, but I'm also speaking to allies, to people who may, you know, to racists, to policymakers, to decision makers. And I now feel that urgency is like, if I don't do this now, like somebody needs to put their voice out there along with the other great voices that are out there. And I feel like it's one of the only ways, writing is resistance, especially for people of color. And so putting it out there is kind of documenting the truth that's going on right now. Because they can take everything away, but they can't take away books. They can burn books, but the words are still there, right? And so right now it feels more pressing than ever to have a book like this come out.
You talked about, you know, drafts are hard. They absolutely are. What I also imagine, though, and you've had experience, you know, you've developed your career putting yourself out there like this, in articles, as an editor, but putting a book out there with your name on the cover, with every essay by you, based on your personal experiences, that has got to feel a bit heavy, I suppose. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're very right. Like I said, all I've ever wanted was to have a book and be an author. And it's happened now, but I did not expect the stuff that came afterwards. So I didn't expect, you know, to be like, okay, I have my book deal, and then sit down and start writing, working on the draft, and then being frozen. Like, I've got writer's block. I doubt myself. And writing the book has been the hardest thing. I've never really doubted myself like this when it comes to journalism and my work, but sitting down and hearing that voice that says, you're a failure, you can't write this, like, they chose the wrong person, that stuff is very tricky. So that's hard, but it's also hard to write a book that's very different than an article or an essay. You're pouring your heart into a book, and in the books that I'm writing, there are people who are going to be affected by it. So it's preparing myself, one, for you know, where this book goes, whether it, you know, it does well or it doesn't, preparing my family for the kinds of things that come out of that book, because just by virtue of me writing about myself, I'm writing about them, preparing for people to learn about my sex life, or, you know, realizing that I am, you know, I'm not the nicest person. I'm a nice person, but I'm also human and I'm deeply flawed. So all these things that I'm not prepared for, that I have to now prepare myself for, it's very, very tricky. I don't know if I'm gonna have any friends after this. We'll have to see, but it's all that risk planning that you never think of, and it weighs really heavy on me.
I'll be your friend.
Okay, I'll take that. I'll take that. Thank you.
No, because I am super, super keen on reading this book. Speaking of just kind of the process of it, I think a lot of listeners probably also have this dream. I dreamt of being able to publish a book. So how did you eventually get this book deal, making this transition from being a freelance writer, reporter, to having this two-book deal?
So it's been a process, but I've always felt like I've had goals. And when I was in elementary school, they made us do this exercise where you close your eyes and you think of the one thing that you want, and it was a book. And since then, I've been like, what are the steps I can take to get to that? So in the writing that I do is very deliberate. It's sending out a certain message. It's on a certain topic, and I've made myself the expert on that. So making yourself the expert and kind of owning your niche. And I think a lot of times young people who are interested in journalism are told, well, you know, it's not really good to have a niche because you can't write anything else. Or you get pigeonholed and they think you can't write anything else. And I've struggled a lot with that, with, you know, people saying, well, you're going to get pigeonholed, you're going to get blacklisted, no one in media is going to want to hire you, you're not going to be able to write anything else. And I kind of took that on and said, well, no, I can write everything, but this is what I choose. And really sticking by myself and not selling myself out and selling myself short has really helped, because I've built my career on that, and I was right. I stayed true, and you know, now more than ever, we're talking about race, and they need people who write about that stuff to be here. So I did that, kept writing, and when I got to London, I said, there's something here. I don't know if it's a book, it's something, but I'm gonna write down everything bad that happens in London. And I started writing that stuff. And in the meantime, I started researching, like, you know, just how do you create a book? What's the process along the way? Also, pro tip, if you can have a project, if you have a class, I had a class that let us do a project on just about anything. I have a certificate in writing, so I did writing courses. And I ended up writing my proposal in my creative writing class and worked on it with a professor. It was a little bit towards, you know, my goal, but it was the start so that I knew I could finish something. So I had that proposal sitting for a few years. I finished it in 2014. In the meantime, I read some books on writing proposals, on how to publish a book. I learned about the industry. When I went to J school, I started networking. So where people were actually networking with like news journalists, I kind of tried to go into publishing a little bit more, tried to go the magazine route, and made friends, made connections. And actually about a year ago, met someone who was able to help me with a proposal, who is wonderful, and said, like, there's something here, and you should continue this. So continued working on that, had a manuscript ready. The one thing is, if you're looking to write a book and have it published, you should have something to show for it. So have a proposal, have some sample chapters. You don't have to have a manuscript done, but have something. And I had all that, and this person said that they were interested, and they set me up with an agent, and it was all kind of history from there. And it happened very quickly. Quickly and really didn't, because I've been working on it for so long.
Well, and I think something you mentioned to me before was that you actually spent a bit of money on, was it writing courses or like writing for publishing?
Yes. One thing that is really important to me is investing in my career. And I always tell people this. If you can go buy a pair of like fancy boots because they have a label on it, you can invest in your career. And so I'm an introvert. I hate networking, but I'll pay my $5 and go to something. I've never regretted it. I do that. I sometimes go to conferences or talks, even if I have to pay money, because I feel inspired by going to those things. I've actually spent some money on a course on how to write a proposal. I think I spent like $400 on that. And I went back and forth being like, I don't know. I bought the course, refunded it, and I'm like, come on. Like, if this is what I really want, spend the money. So I did that. I bought some books on writing a proposal. I studied those books like I haven't since like undergrad. I had them highlighted and annotated. I read them on the subway. I read them at lunchtime. And so I spent that money because I knew it was going to pay off. But I think the hardest part is when you don't know if it's going to pay off. Am I writing this book because it's going to pay off, or do I not know? Like, what is the point of this? If I spend all this money, what if it doesn't pay off? And it's really cheesy, but I think really having faith in your idea and having faith that there is a place there for it and it's necessary is so important, because if you don't have that, you'll quit.
I really love that advice. I really do. The idea that you're not going to learn everything you need to learn at school. It's impossible. You're going to have to bet on yourself. And mm-hmm. if you don't bet on yourself, you know, nobody else will. I love the fact that, you know, you're about to publish this book. You're making a dream happen. But this kind of idea that, you know, you were already becoming a kind of well-known writer in Canada, especially in this space, and yet you were still kind of humble enough to actually study on how to get a book deal. I really love that story.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in always learning. I don't know everything, and I'm so grateful for, I think the great thing about journalism is that people lift each other up. Nobody ever leaves you in the dirt. If you've been in the industry and someone comes in, they help you, and I've had that kind of help. So I'm humbled by that, and I'm humbled by the fact that this is a challenge. I know journalism, but I'm not the best at it, and journalism is very different than publishing. Writing an essay or writing an article is very different than writing a book. So I had to go and study, and I had to surrender to it, really, and just say, like, you know what, I don't know everything. I am starting from scratch, and I feel terrified, and it feels like a lot of information, but I need to do this to get to where I need to be.
And we're going to continue paying it forward on this podcast because this is what we're all about. We're all about paying it forward. So if you have a chance to speak to this new generation of aspiring journalists, and I think many of whom are people of color who do want to put themselves out there, who have something to say, but may have found themselves in a position where they're not supported by it, you know, personally or professionally, or they're rightfully a bit nervous about the reaction it could cause. I was wondering if you had any advice for, you know, these younger aspiring journalists who hope to reach that kind of level or have that kind of platform as well.
Yeah, it's really not cheesy. I was going to say it's cheesy, but really you have to believe in yourself and you have to invest in yourself. And you have to really believe in what you are doing and why you're doing it. Putting yourself out there is not easy. It's much easier to walk away from it than to, you know, be brave and be fearless. But there are people out there who have a very similar story to yours, who also want to write and may look up to you. They just need that push. They need to see someone like them out there represented. So believing in your idea and believing that it takes you somewhere, it carries you. We're all just really people, and I think we tend to, you know, when we hear about people's personal lives, for example, we kind of forget, like, oh, like, they do this, they do that. But when you put yourself out there, you start to normalize these things so that we can have these conversations. I can now talk about sex with my grandfather, which is weird, but it opens these possibilities that you never thought of. And along the way, you only have you. Your parents, your family may say you can't do it. Your friends may say you can't do it. Your partners may say you can't do it, but you need to hold on to yourself because it will take you much further. You only have you. Put yourself out there and don't be afraid.
Attorney Martis, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Once again, that was Attorney Martis, senior editor at Daily Extra and soon-to-be-published author. Well, that does it for us at the moment. The executive producer of Working Media is H.G. Watson. I'm Adrian Ma. Thank you for listening.